20 Australian women and 40 of their children remain stranded in a Syrian detention camp, their life in limbo after joining the so-called Islamic State Caliphate. The government says these women and children could pose a significant terror threat if they're returned to Australian soil. Tonight, a Four Corners investigation brings us their stories.
I'd like the Australian government to know that we're actually broken. Okay, we're shattered. We are broken people. We're tired, we're broken, we're shattered, we just want normality for our kids. It's not fair. It's not fair for the kids. It's not fair for us. Most of us didn't even come willingly here.
That's Mariam Debussy. She's a 28-year-old woman who spent the last 6 months in the Al-Hol camp in Syria. Tonight's report is by Dylan Welch and he joins us now. Welcome back to Breakfast, Dylan.
Thanks, morning.
What is life like for these women and children?
I mean, it's nothing short of atrocious. That camp is a very strange place. It's like nothing I've seen in my life. You're talking about 70,000 people in this camp, of whom 10,000 are foreigners from all around the world. In winter, it's below freezing. In summer, you're talking temperatures, and we were there in August this time, temperatures over 50 degrees Celsius, living in tents. Virtually no access to healthcare. I think a report recently suggested that 334 children have died there since December. And there are, as you said, there are 20 Australian women and 44, in fact, Australian children. And of those 44 Australian children, 30 are aged under five.
Are there any men there?
No, this is a camp for women and children. The men are in jails in Iraq and Syria, or in the main, they're dead.
Now, these women are former so-called brides of Islamic State. You've interviewed some of them and heard their stories. And I heard that woman say, we didn't end up here willingly. How did they end up in this situation?
It's a very good question. And you know, I have to preface this with Syria is an information black hole. People can make assertions and it's very hard to test them. And that's not an issue just bedeviling us. It's the government also finds this difficult. But by and large, what the women said is that they were taken there by their male relatives, their fathers, their sons, their husbands. A lot of them were taken without their knowledge. So the person that you just heard from, Mariam Debussy, she was married to Khaled Zahab, who has subsequently died. He took her to Turkey. They went on a holiday after they had got married. They ended up in Turkey and he told her that they were going to find his sister, who actually was in Syria, and he said they were going to meet her in Turkey. They're essentially trying to rescue her. The next thing she knows, she's in a car, she's taken to a place, and then she's told to run. All these people are there, she doesn't know what's going on, she's told to run. She's with her little 18-month-old at this point. There's shots being fired, she doesn't know what's going on, she's just running. And then she gets to another place, put in a car, taken to a building. They take her passport, they take her phone, and she sees a flag on the wall, and that's the flag of Islamic State.
So by then she's in Syria?
Yes. And we do know that...
It's a teeny bit hard to understand how you could get into a car in Turkey and find yourself in Syria, but...
Yeah, it is. But I guess what your listeners need to understand is back then, in the early years of the Syrian war, that border was incredibly porous. I've heard time and time again, not just from women, but people who intentionally chose to cross, including journalists, that you just walked across. You didn't go somewhere, you didn't show your passport, you just went.
You've also spoken with the families of these women here in Australia. What did they tell you?
In a nutshell, they want their families back. They accept that there is concern within the Australian public about these people. And they, by and large, they accept that some of their family members may have to face some form of criminal sanction when they return, whether that's in the form of these temporary exclusion orders or whether it's being charged and sent to jail, convicted and sent to jail. But they want them back. They are in dire straits in this camp. They are very ill. I met one woman who gave birth a couple of months ago. She was taken in when she was 15, against her knowledge. She's now 19. She has four children.
Oh, dear.
She gave birth to the last one a couple of months ago. When she gave birth, she dropped down to 38 kilograms, the mother. There are children there, children under one, who are very ill. You know, unfortunately, I think it's probably a matter of time until an Australian woman or an Australian child dies in that camp. So what the families wanted was them to come home, then face the music here, but at least come home and be safe.
You actually met the father of Mariam, the young woman we heard from during the introduction. Let's hear from him.
This has been something that we've been dealing with for 4 or 5 years. We've done with this privately. I've been told to keep it private with the government officials that I've been dealing with. And I've not spoken about this publicly before. I've not spoken to many people outside of a very close number of friends. It's been a journey. Where did it begin? That's a really hard question to answer because I keep going back over what's happened, trying to make sense of things and where things did begin and where things could have happened and where they could have been different. And I really haven't made total sense of all that stuff that took place as yet.
And that was Kamal. Is it Kamal Dabusi, the father of Mariam? Mm. Are the families receiving any support or advice from the Australian government?
They're absolutely in contact with the government, ongoing contact with various arms of the government, and they have been for years. I wouldn't want to speak for the families, but I do get the sense that they feel like sometimes the government hasn't been there to help them, but has been there to get information from them. I think the families have a mixed view of the assistance from the Australian government. Some appreciate it, others feel like they've been used a bit. In the end, though, they all share that one overriding aim, which is to lobby the government, this group of families, to bring their family home.
Do you talk about other countries? What are other countries doing about this? Because there are other, France particularly, and the UK is facing similar dilemmas, huge ethical dilemmas.
Dozens of countries around the world, and it's an issue for every single one of them. Strangely, a lot of the non-Western countries have actually taken a lot more of their people back. When we were there, one of the Central Asian countries, I think it was Tajikistan, actually on the day we were there, were taking out 100 of their citizens. By and large, the Western liberal democracies have been more reticent, I think probably because of public opinion.
But they have changed, haven't they? I think the French now are taking them back.
The French have begun, though again, and I stand to be corrected, but they've only taken orphans back. They may, you know, and I think that, you know, England also has issues with this. One thing to note here, though, is that the US themselves have said quite strongly that these nations should take their people back. It is unfair to leave this responsibility in the hands of the Kurds who have spent 5 years suffering under Islamic State.
Did the women you spoke to acknowledge they had supported IS?
No, they didn't. I think some of them acknowledged that they sent out tweets early on and that they may have in some way not understood the situation. But to be honest, there was not much acknowledgement of that. And, you know, what they said generally was that they stayed inside. They didn't put much on social media. There were a few women who did, and I think we all know about them, Zahra Daman, those kind of people. But most of the women we spoke to didn't go on social media. They didn't exist much outside of the house. Now, you know, I did ask them, what did you think of all the atrocities? What did you think of men being burned alive, of hands being cut off, people being crucified? Their answers were that we didn't want to know about it. We stayed inside. Now, I know your audience might find that hard to believe, and to be honest, from some of them, I did as well. All I would say is you've got to remember this is an intensely patriarchal society. I mean, you can imagine under Islamic State. And a lot of these women really were just there to cook the food and make the babies. And they weren't even allowed outside without a male person.
What a diabolical problem.
It truly is.
Oh, yes. Dylan, thank you.
Welcome.
Dylan Welsh has filed tonight's Four Corners investigation called Married to Islamic State. It goes to air at 8:30. You can also watch it on iView.